Hey, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Mobilecast. We're coming to you live from downtown Boston. We're actually in the offices of Kinvey, and I have the great pleasure to sit here with Shravas Sridhar, who is the CEO and founder of Kinvey. Shravas, introduce yourself. Tell me if I say your last name wrong.
Brian, as always, it's a lot of fun to be with you and look at your smiling face, and hopefully I can provide some entertainment for the next few minutes that we're going to chat. My name is Shravas Sridhar. I'm the founder and CEO of Kinvey, and we're, like Brian said, we're a Boston-based company, and we help large enterprises like Farmers Insurance and Johnson & Johnson and even Brian's former employer, Sanofi, with our mobility platform to help them power all their mobile applications.
Okay, so let's dive right into it. How long ago did you found Kinvey? Where were you beforehand? Mm-hmm. What led you to founding Kinvey and choosing this space to be in?
I'll give you a slightly longer version of that story. So I went to school.
You never tell the shorter story. Let's be fair here.
Well, there's a lot of fun anecdotes in the longer version. So I went to school at the University of Texas at Austin, and after I graduated, I was part of the founding team at a startup based in Austin. And 3 years in, I had the opportunity to move to Europe to run European operations for that company. And we got acquired in 2007. I was living in London at the time. After the acquisition, I spent a year helping with the integration of the two companies. And then I took a year off, and I fell in love during that period. And the girl I fell in love with called me up one day and said, "Guess what?" I said, "What?" She said, "I'm moving to Boston to go to a PhD in clinical psychology." I said, "Well, I guess I'm moving to Boston too." And that's how I ended up here. And so when I moved here, we ended up getting married.
So to be fair, the real title of this episode should be Kinvey, a Love Story?
It is. I give my wife complete credit, A, for the company, and B, for the fact that the company is based here in Boston. Complete credit. I would not have ended up here back in the U.S.
So you moved here. You moved here to be with your future wife.
Yeah.
You got married.
Yeah.
How did Kinvey come about?
We got married, and I used to have a T-shirt, which she made me throw away. And
you've had numerous T-shirts she's made you throw away, not just one.
The T-shirt said, "I'm a kept man," because I wasn't working. I was at home, and my wife was a student, and so I was a kept man in the house of a student. And she said, "I think you need to get out and do something."
To be fair, you probably did really well in the acquisition. So I'm not sure the term kept man, it was sort of semi-retired,
right,
maybe.
Right, something like that. But she was the one that motivated me to say, let's go find a new idea, let's go build something.
In other words, could you stop sitting around in your underwear and do something? I actually have to do work when I get home when I'm studying, and you're on the couch watching TV.
Right, and playing golf. That's what I was doing. I was watching TV, I was playing golf, I was getting networked into the startup community here in Boston and loving it and going to parties and things like that. And so I finally decided in 2010 that I needed to get a job. And so I talked to a bunch of people. I did some contracting work and then started kicking around some ideas. And I finally came upon the idea for Kinvey and started the company in 2011, in March of 2011.
And what was the original idea? Because it's changed a little bit.
Yep.
I think for the good.
Yep. Well, the first, one of the first ideas I had, let me back up. So when I was thinking of ideas, I had a filter which said, what would
Hang on. Let's be fair here. I've never seen you with a filter. You mean you had an idea filter?
I did have an idea filter.
Because you certainly don't have one for your mouth.
Yeah, it's only inwards, it's not outwards. So when the ideas were coming into my head, I asked a simple question to myself. I said, if this idea became successful and became real, what would I want to be saying about it? How would I define success for this idea? Is it making a lot of money? Is it having a company with 10,000 people in it? What does success look like? And my conclusion was, if this idea became successful, I wanted to be able to look back and said, I built something that brought value to over 1 billion people. That's how I define success.
So you want to be the McDonald's of app development.
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
I wanted to be the McDonald's of app development was a good way of putting it. And that was it. And I said, what could bring a value to a billion people that I could do?
So to be fair here, every time, yeah, and I happen to know this, every time they get a, they close a sale, they ring a gong.
Yes.
Does this mean that at some point there'll be a sign in here that says over a billion served?
We actually have an internal sign that's, it's a mobile app for everybody in the company where we actually see how many people we're serving via the platform. But the initial idea was extremely different than Kinvey. The initial idea was I was at a friend's house, and he and his wife had three kids. And his wife came into the house via the garage door, and she had a bunch of bags in her hands from the grocery store. And all the kids came running down and started rummaging through the grocery store and said, Mom, you forgot to get me this, and you forgot to get me that, and Mom, I needed this for my school, and so on. And there was a little fight that happened. And so I looked at my friend and said, does this happen all the time? And he said, yes. And this guy's a really smart guy, one of the smartest people I know. And I said, why haven't you solved this with technology? There's Google, there's Apple, there's all these things. You know, why haven't you solved this? He said, well, I need a family information manager that aggregates all my family information real time and allows my family to communicate in and out of the system using the tools of their choice. I said, I could build that. And I started looking into that. And it turned out that from a technical perspective, it was a fragmentation problem. There were people that were consuming information on multiple endpoints, and there was data that was coming in from multiple endpoints. So how do you bring all this together and put it together? Hence the name Kinvey, kin being family, and convey being communication. How do I enable family communication? I built V1 of that product, and I showed it to a bunch of moms. I did a lot of focus groups. And the conclusion I came to was I did not know how to build something for moms, and I didn't know how to sell to moms. I just couldn't do it.
Did you even ask your wife if it was? Because I know you. You probably didn't show it to her first.
She was one of my first users. She was part of the focus groups. However, at the time, my focus groups catered around families that had at least two kids, because that was the tipping point when life became truly complicated for most families. And so, yeah, I showed it to my wife, but she wasn't my target demographic. She was, you know, we didn't have children at the time. And so I built Kinvey out. I showed it to a bunch of people. They loved it, but, you know, everyone had their own unique nuance that they wanted in the product. And it was a really hard UX problem. And then number one, and then number two, I think it was a really hard sales problem on how do you sell to moms, because they are the budget owners.
So to be fair, when you first found Kinvey, you were actually a single app company.
Yeah.
Trying to sell. Now, I've known Shravish for a few years now, and I want to laugh out loud at watching him try and sell an app to moms. I just don't see it.
Well, I was smart enough to realize that pretty quickly, and I said that was not going to be a good idea for me to pursue. But when I showed it to people, at least in the technology circles, they said, wow, you've got something here where you've built this app really fast. How did you do it? And so I walked them through the baseline platform that was powering this application, the ability to get information from multiple places and then deliver it in multiple places using some intelligence in the middle. And they said, well, if you can do this for me in a generic fashion, every app that I'm building needs capabilities like this. I will use it. And that's when Kinvey, as it stands today, took shape. And that was early 2011, and officially started working on it March of 2011.
And I guess I met you guys in, what, 2012?
No.
2013?
Summer of 2013, yeah. 2 years after that. But a little over 2 years after that.
So, yeah, I guess it's only been 2 years. I thought it was longer.
It's been 2 years.
Wow. And when I met you, you were... So, because you did a further pivot. I don't know that it's fair to say, but so let's walk through that.
Yeah, so when we started the company, so I got a couple of people I knew to come in, and so it was three of us were the first core team. And we got into an accelerated program here in Boston called TechStars. And the reason I got into that was I knew very early on that this company would need a lot of capital. Building platforms takes time and is expensive. And I didn't have a network in the U.S. because I'd spent 7 years prior in Europe. And so I needed to reestablish myself here in Boston. And Techstars was a phenomenal avenue for me to get plugged into the community. They helped us a lot. And they really exposed us to both entrepreneurs and investors here in Boston. And that relationship still goes. You know, I'm very active with the Techstars community here and vice versa. And what that allowed us to do was get the capital to build a team to build this platform. And one of my first strategic decisions was we had to make sure this platform worked. And the way we were going to do that was we were going to open it up fairly early on to developers all over the world and have them build applications on us and see what the issues were. What were the bottlenecks? What kind of apps couldn't they build? What kind of features did they need that we weren't providing? Were we going to hit scale issues? Were we going to hit security issues, etc.? And so the first 2 years of the business was primarily around building a product that developers could use in a self-service fashion and prove that they could build any app that they could think of using us and run it at scale and run it in production. And it was really interesting. You know, we weren't making a lot of money because it's hard to monetize an indie developer community. But what was really proud for us as a company was we were the back end for many, many, many small businesses. Like, we were their AWS. If we went down, their business is shut down. And that put a lot of pride both in the people as well as gave us a lot of confidence that we were ready for prime time. And 2013 was when we said the product was ready to go after the enterprise. To the outside world, it's a pivot, right? Because we went from developer-centric messaging and marketing to enterprise-centric messaging and marketing. But, you know, it was pretty well intended that at some point where we would go from being a company or a product to a business was when we made the transition to the enterprise. And summer of 2013 was when we started. And in fact, Brian was one of the first prospects that we pitched.
Boy, did you learn from that.
And he completely tore us apart in those first few weeks.
To be fair, you know, I looked at you and a bunch of other people, and at the time, you didn't use the term MBAS.
Yep.
And mobile backend as a service. I'll let Shravish explain what that means. And
yeah.
Then I'll get mad at him, which he expects. But you came and you showed me something, and you couldn't really describe what you had.
Yeah.
You couldn't figure out really how to tell me what it gave me.
Sure.
Other than, well, you can build apps.
Yep.
And I remember saying, I actually see something here, but I don't understand. You couldn't explain it well.
Yep.
I think we had 3 or 4 meetings where I just wouldn't put you in front of anybody.
Yep.
Because, you know, I wasn't the app development arm.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm happy to put you in front of them, but I'm not going to put you in front of them unless you actually have a message that makes sense.
Right.
And I think we went back and forth a bunch of times. And you came in and, to be honest, you sort of fell on your face in that meeting. But you got something out of it. And I think that that worked well. But then you kind of had a small internal pivot again, which I think was the last pivot you've had. And why don't we talk about that one?
Yep.
And then we'll talk about what you actually do today and how you describe it.
Well, in 2011, when we started the company, I wanted to define our space in a concrete way. So we're actually sitting in a room where right behind me there's a piece of paper where I scribbled for the first time in May of 2011 the words back into the service. And there are 2 other options on that piece of paper. And my VP of engineering was sitting in the same room with me, and I showed him this paper and said, these are my top 3 choices. What do you want to call what we do?
So since I don't want to get up, what are the other 2 choices?
So the first choice is back into the service. The second choice is cloud backend management. And the third choice is cloud data management. And he liked back into the service the best, and that's what we ended up doing. And since then, at the time, people were calling what we do platform as a service, mobile platform as a service. And so there's a lot of confusion in the market. And for better or worse, back into the service stuck. And then in early 2012, there's a really great analyst at Forrester. His name is Michael Faesmeyer. Mike started talking to a lot of us. Companies like Kinvey, Parse, StackMob were some of the early back into the service vendors at the time. And Michael wrote a paper he published for Forrester where he called it mobile back into service. So Mike put I'll give him credit for putting the M in front of the BAS. And since then, MBAS is what, in general, the space is called. And the reason we had problems in 2013, and I think most startups go through this, is you enter a new market with some messaging, but if you haven't really lived and breathed that market, it's really hard to figure out your messaging correctly. And so when we were hiring for people to build out the platform, both on the development side and the sales side and the marketing side, we were hiring people to make an indie developer message. We still hadn't hired the people in the company in the summer of 2013 to bring the enterprise message forward. So we were learning, we were experimenting, and you know, we were shooting in the dark, so to speak. And you know, feedback from you and feedback from others really helped in honing that message. And eventually, you know, the secret sauce that we found was it was a lot about identity and data. And a big challenge in the enterprise is, I have all these identity and data systems. How do I make that available? And the market then started getting hot and started calling it digital transformation. And now it's all about, what is my digital strategy in the enterprise? And what are my sets of technologies that I need to enable that?
And my objection has always been, and this was funny. So the first time, I think it was either probably the second time I met Shravish, because I've been dealing with a couple other people here. And I think when we first met, you were what, 12 people? Were you even that
number? We were really small. 2013, we must have been 15, 17 people, something like that. We're pretty small.
Yeah, you were pretty small. And he takes me out to dinner, an Indian restaurant with his brand new, I mean, I think he'd been here a week or two, yeah. Head of sales, his brand new head of sales. We go to Indian, and first of all, his friend, although he was willing to eat Indian food, said it can't be spicy.
Yeah.
Which doesn't work for me or Shravish, because yeah. We both like spicy. So that was the first thing. But we ate dinner, and we're walking back, because you know, I'm walking back to, I think, the bus, and he's walking back to Amtrak. And we're arguing in the middle of a new – we're walking up the block. I think we're walking up 8th Avenue. I think we're somewhere around 24th or 26th, and we have like 10 blocks to go. And we're arguing and yelling at each other.
Yeah.
And his head of sales starts walking 10 feet in front of us, because he's like, I don't want to be that I know these people. And we were arguing over the fact that you put an M in front of Bass,
yeah.
Because – and I sometimes say this, and I can understand the disagreement that, you know, a backend and as a service is in a lot of ways middleware.
Yeah.
There are other pieces to it,
sure.
But in a lot of ways it's middleware. But why does it have to be mobile?
Yeah.
And the fact that you create this backend as a service – you don't have to run mobile often. You can run laptop apps. You can make apps for anything.
Sure.
And, you know, you argued back at me because you weren't willing to, you know, I didn't create the name, but I love the name.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I think in the end you finally agreed with me, and or else I yelled louder. But to be fair, he actually does out-yell me when he wants to.
I think ultimately back into service is the right intent. I think it shouldn't have M. I think it should just be back into service. I think it's very rare that vendors coin terms and they stick. This one has stuck for 3 or 4 years, but I think as the market matures, I fully expect there to be a new term for what we do, because it's going to encompass a lot more than what core back into service is. So I don't, you know, eventually I see it being something platform. I don't know what those are. Maybe we'll come up with it. Maybe somebody else will.
The good news is if they take out the word back end, I have to suffer all his jokes.
Bad news is all my jokes go to waste.
I don't. So I think you have a shirt that says, does it say my beautiful big back end or something like that?
I think you have a shirt that says, we got your back end. Amongst other things.
Yeah, so he's made some of these jokes from stage, and they get laughs, but at some point, you know, that'll have to change. So that was 2013.
Mm-hmm.
2014, you started to gain some steam.
Yeah.
You've grown as the company. Now it's 2015. Let's start with, how big are you?
Yeah, so we have 55 people now. Company's still primarily based in Boston, but we have people in different parts of the U.S. and then a couple of people international. But we're starting to grow at a fairly quick clip.
And if you're willing to tell me, you've completed what round?
So we've completed a seed round, an A round, and a B round of financing over the last 4.5 years. And we raised a total of $17.8 million across those three rounds.
Okay. So you've done that, and you're still hiring.
Yes.
So if you know good people, Shravish would be happy to receive their resume. That'll be in the links at the end.
And as a testament, Brian sends me all his best friends as referrals to convey. So you can
I don't send all of them. I send you know what? It takes the right type of person to work. To work in a startup, be willing to work in a startup. Be willing to work for you.
Yeah.
It takes a sense of humor, certainly. But you've grown a lot since 2013. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that you guys added was identity.
Yep.
Which I think was a first when you look at the backend as a service. And we're seeing a lot of other pieces. So where have you grown to? You know, what's it look like for a company like you mentioned Farmers earlier?
Yep.
And the like, what sort of problem do they come to you with and how do you help them?
Yeah. So I'll answer the question with some personal philosophy and then with tactical product strategy. I think first thing is from a personal philosophy perspective, when we decided in 2013, when we were like 15, 17 people in 2013 to get into the enterprise market, the decision we made was we were going to grow deliberately. The mistake I see a lot of startups making, especially in the enterprise market, is that they go raise a large round of financing and they just go from 15 people to 45, 50 people in 6 months. And I find that to be really hard to justify because if you haven't figured your enterprise strategy out, then you're going to be in a position as a CEO that you're going to have to lay off people at some point because your board's going to make you do it. And so we took the tactic of scaling the team 4 to 5 people a quarter, not more than that, and every quarter asking ourselves, what is the number one problem our customers are talking about from a product standpoint? And let's fix that and be hyper-focused on fixing that. So when we initially started on the enterprise path, we heard a lot of problems. We heard about data. We heard about identity. We heard about, you know, where do I run all my mobile code? How do I write mobile apps? Can you make writing mobile apps easy? We heard about analytics. Everyone was across the board. And so what we really decided on doing is we asked the question, what are the things that every mobile app is going to need no matter what? And identity was always top of that list. And so the first major advancement that we did to our product was we said there's a lot of fragmentation with identity and authorization management systems in the enterprise. They were not built and delivered for mobile applications. How can we bring a layer where for the front-end developer building the applications, he or she can choose the tool of their choice, native iOS, Xamarin, PhoneGap, whatever, and they make one login API call using an SDK to log into Kinvey. And then the back-end owner can say, this app is actually connecting to my CA SiteMinder, or it's connecting to ADFS, or it's connecting to Ping Identity. Make the configuration change with no code in Kinvey to proxy that login call to the backend system. The login happens behind the covers and the user's logged in. And the front-end developer does not have to know anything about the backend identity system. How do I make that completely seamless end-to-end with one line of code? And we did that. And we launched that and we called that Mobile Identity Connect. And I think we're the only company that actually has this working end-to-end in that seamless of a fashion. That was feature one. And every customer uses that feature. And that's great.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, that's part of – I've always liked watching you guys. And, you know, it's one of the reasons I think we've become friends outside the company just for the fact that watching you grow, watching you do it deliberately – and, you know, I get, you know, as part of the MobileCast, it's kind of nice. I get to talk to a lot of startups and a lot of people. And I also get to talk, you know, I get to talk to people in the enterprise, and I came from the enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I see the problems, I see the headaches, and it's always cool to kind of look for solutions. How do you describe what you do? Because, and I'll take, you know, taking the listeners back, the first time I sat down with two people, it wasn't Shravish. And as I said, it was very confusing what they did. And it took going back and forth maybe 4 weeks. And I saw that there was something there. So for me, I was pushing them to actually figure out how to say what they did. And what do you do? You do Mobile Identity Connect. You do some other pieces. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Sure.
What do you do? Yeah. And if you want, use an example or something, but what does a backend as a service truly do?
Sure. If you look at any app that you're going to download on your phone or your tablet or any app that you even log into a website, every app has five common components again and again and again. It's pretty much repeatable across the board. One is this notion of identity. You got to log in the user, and there are certain rules that govern the user. Number two, there's data flowing back and forth, so what you interact with. There's number three is there's some business intelligence. At a technical term is business logic. There's business logic that's running, that's governing all the rules on this data and this identity. And then fourth, there's some engagement going on. There's some push notifications, there's some emails, there's some SMSs, etc. And then the fifth is all the tracking and the operations and the scaling, the security, all the behind-the-scenes stuff that happened for the application. We take all of those five things, we plug them into your enterprise, and even if your enterprise is highly fragmented, we take the identity systems that you have, the data systems that you have, all the engagement features that you have or may not have, in which case you would use us, and we provide you with a business logic engine so that to the front-end developer building the apps and delivering the apps, it just looks like one API that they have to connect into using any tools of their choice. So we take all the fragmentation, make it look like one API, and they're building apps against that one API.
And you didn't. So I like to call that the funnel effect. You take all the back-end sources and all the back-end APIs, and you can have multiple. And if you're an enterprise, you definitely do have multiple.
Yep.
And you output a single API for people to write apps to. But you know, one of the words that you know some people on your team use, and I actually like, is you decouple the front end from the back end. Explain what that means and how that works.
So the interesting and unique thing about our architecture is that we've taken each one of those first four components of identity, data, business logic, and engagement, and we provided out of the box capabilities in our platform for greenfield applications because we come from a world where people were building applications on Kinvey with no legacy. We had to provide complete data set features, identity features, engagement features, and business logic features for net new applications. And so a developer can log into Kinvey and build a fully functioning app and put it in front of users, even with sample data and so on, have a user log in, interact with the data, have some business rules, get engaged, and get validation that the app is built correctly. Once that app is done, then the developer asks the question, for these pieces of data or this piece of identity, I need to flip the switch and wire it up to some backend service that I'm exposing in my enterprise. And that flip the switch happens out of the box. So we've built connectors to all the popular enterprise systems. And the advantage of this decoupled model is that the front-end developer doesn't have to change a line of code when you flip the switch. Everything just works seamlessly end-to-end. The other advantage is, for example, when you move from Siebel as your CRM to Salesforce as your CRM, the app doesn't change. You just change the connector, and the app still remains the same.
Yeah, I think that was probably the piece that I saw that was really interesting, the fact that even if you change that back end, you didn't have to change an app.
Yep.
And I've been in the enterprise long enough that, and people still do it, sadly, although not nearly as often, where people would hard code IP addresses.
Yep.
You know, of the server that they were connecting to. They weren't even using DNS names or UNCs. It was, hey, connect directly to this, and those apps lasted for years.
Yep.
And then you made a change, and the apps broke.
Yep.
And that was certainly pulled into mobile as well, of how do I do that? It wasn't necessarily UNCs, but it was, I built my code to only talk to this. Now you can't change it because this app, the business depends upon, everything else. And so to me, that piece of having one API was actually very cool.
Yeah. And the hard part is on the front end, there's fragmentation on the front end too. And we shouldn't underestimate that. And that's why we've been in another unique position where all this is patented. So Kinvey has awarded a patent for this end-to-end capability because the data has to live on Apple or an Android device or even a browser offline and online. Because
or Microsoft device.
You or can't leave Microsoft device. And offline is important because in the mobile world, you don't know how good your network is going to be. Even in the web world, people are writing these single-page applications, and they want it to work with the browser cache. And in the desktop world, people take their laptops and go to places where there's no Wi-Fi, for example. And so if you're going to do offline, offline is hard if you don't have that single API, because your SAP data is going to look very different than your SharePoint data. It's going to look very different than documents that live in Box. How do you make all that work offline in a consistent way? If you're a developer, you have to learn the nuances of each data set and figure out how to manage it in an offline cache. With Kinvey, that happens seamlessly with the SDK. Very hard problem to solve at scale.
So you have this patented.
Yep.
And yet there are lots of other MBAS vendors out there.
Yes.
Or at least who claim to be MBAS
yes.
vendors. What's your relationship like? You have to defend your patent yet?
You know, I don't believe in being offensive with patents, honestly. I like to use patents as a mechanism to show that we've actually done something different and unique to our customers. I also like it as a mechanism to push us as a company to be innovative. And a lot of startups I know don't have a mentality of pushing that kind of innovation. We try to do hard things here. And we think if we can do it well in a way in which it's easily consumable, that's why I keep using this word one line of code a lot, this phrase. If we can do it with one line of code, so do hard things easy, I think there's tremendous value to the customers. And one of the knocks on Kinvey has always been when we show the demo, because the demo makes it look so easy, people undervalue the technology. And so we've had to train our salespeople to actually back up and say, I'm going to show you something really hard. Here's why it is hard. And oh, by the way, I'm going to make it look really easy for you. If we didn't set that up well, people thought that we were doing something that was just really easy and they didn't get the full value quickly.
Yeah, by the way, I think I've come up, I think we're just going to call you the mullet technology. You know, party in the back, business in the front. But no, I agree with you. And it's interesting to watch. What do you come? Well, actually, can you give me a customer example first?
Sure. So you mentioned Farmers. So I'll give you the Farmers example. So Farmers Insurance had a strategy last year of wanting to create the best digital experience with their customers. Not mobile, digital. And in their definition, digital is across multiple channels. Social, there's customer engagement, there's mobile, there's web, etc. And so for the mobile world, they wanted to come up with a way in which they could build a top quality application in a finite amount of time. They actually had a fixed date at which they wanted to launch. And one of their executives told me that I'd have to tattoo my date because the date on my back because the date was non-negotiable. So they had some time pressures. They were using different vendors to build the application, and they had a lot of legacy systems that they needed to connect into. And some of those legacy systems were not fine-tuned for mobile. In other words, it didn't give you sub-second response times because that's what you need for a consumer-facing application. And so they went and evaluated different types of mobile technology. They looked at back-end as service. They looked at what Gartner calls MADPs, which is the front-end tools. They looked at PaaS. And they came to the conclusion that to truly solve delivery of data and identity to the device and to be able to manage it and monitor it and scale it and provide customer support around it, they needed an MBAS platform. And they did an evaluation of multiple vendors and they picked us as the winner. And they started work even before contract started. The agility, the nice thing about a product like Kinvey is it's people throw the word cloud a lot and say, we're a cloud platform. My first question is, if you're a cloud platform, can I sign up and try it now without ever talking to you? For me, that's one of the core tenets of being a cloud platform. A lot of companies don't give you that flexibility. So at Farmers, their development team could just sign up and start building apps on Kinvey, prototype it, experiment with the design. And then once the contracts got done, we then had the ability to wire Kinvey up to their backend systems. And then the two teams just met in the middle and everything worked end to end. So we really had the decoupled programming lifecycle in play at Farmers. They delivered the app on time, and now Farmers is pushing us to do more with them. They're sharing their roadmap. We're sharing our roadmap with them. And we're becoming an even more strategic vendor for them. And that puts us in a great position.
So let's hit on one piece there, because we've sort of talked about it, and you actually started as an app development shop, but you don't do the final coding. You don't develop the whole app on Kinvey.
We do not have, Kinvey does not have a professional services arm whatsoever to deliver apps. We don't build apps. All our customers either do it themselves or they outsource it to one of their key SIs, like a Cognizant or like an Accenture.
So your tagline, if I've seen, is you build 75 to 80% of the app, and then the last 20, 25% of coding is
the custom stuff that's the user experience. So what we say is, if you look at an app, about 25% of the work that you're going to have to put in, if you're going to DIY the application, about 25% of the work and the effort is the user experience that an end user touches and feels and experiences on the device of their choice. But the 75% of the work is the backend integrations, the security, the analytics, the core business logic functions, and all the versioning and the lifecycle management of all that on an ongoing basis. And we provide that entire 75% out of the box as a cloud service available now.
And then either you build it yourself, you have your own developers, you can use PhoneGap, Xamarin.
Tools of your choice, anything. The other differentiator Kinvey has is we treat all the popular SDKs as first-class citizens. Many companies that have come into the Kinvey world of mobile backend service either A, had their own front-end tool, so their front-end tool was always the preferred one, and everything else was treated as an unwanted necessary evil that they had to support, so it was never quite good. Or they'd support only iOS and Android, and they wouldn't support all the various JavaScript flavors or Xamarin and so on. We treated everybody the same, so we have feature parity across the board with our SDKs for all the front-end tools.
Okay, so this is great. We sort of understand what Kinvey is. Hopefully my listeners understand it pretty well. Lessons learned. What would you have done differently in the last 4 years since you created a mom app?
I would still like to create the mom app someday, because I think it's still an unsolved problem.
How many kids you have now?
One. Working on the two, is second is coming out next year, but yeah, one right now.
Okay, so version 2.0 comes out by then, so maybe you should put a date on the app and tattoo that on your back.
Yeah, I'd like to live and breathe the problem a little bit more. Maybe I'll get some key insights on what Kinvey would look like if it was a mom app.
Well, as they say, you know, right now you're 2-on-1.
Right.
Then it goes to man to man, and if you decide for 3, you know, now you have to move to zone.
We'll see. Time will tell. But to answer your question, Brian, lessons learned. I was part of a founding team at a startup straight out of school. And then when I was in school, I was part of a founding team at another startup. So this is my third. And number one, doing a startup as a founding CEO is vastly different than doing a startup as part of a founding team, or that's even more different than doing a startup as an employee. So for me, I underestimated how hard this journey is. You know, tension, decisions.
Seeing your family.
Seeing my family, learning how to be a people manager, right? HR.
Yeah, because you were a tech person.
I worked with customers all day. In my career, or I wrote code all day in my first part of my career. Now I one of my key jobs is to make sure that the culture and the people that we hire is consistent and getting better day by day, and that's new for me. The other part is, for me, a key part of the learning was to also be thoughtful about how to make money, because When we started going into the enterprise market, we had a phenomenal opportunity to make money quickly by just building apps, because everybody wanted an app. And we could have easily been a professional services organization now. We might even be a bigger company than we are now. But it was important to step back and say, what was I trying to build when we started the company? And it's
what
still
did you
want to
be when you grew up?
Yeah. And I could have still achieved the goal of bringing value to 1 billion people by, you know, maybe helping build an Instagram-like application for a big enterprise.
Build McDonald's their app.
And we could have done that.
That would have been the quickest way, but
But the people here in this building that work with Kinvey are all product people. And it was an important decision in the journey of the company, but a key lesson learned was to constantly evaluate, are you going after the right sales opportunities, the right customers, and are you doing things that are repeatable at scale? As a startup, you're always going to do custom things, right? That it's going to happen. But are you picking the right custom things to do, because then you can bring it into your product and do it at scale? That's a really constant reminder to myself. Every quarter, we're always looking at that.
So we should start wrapping up soon, but you know, I want to go back to your Techstars comment.
Yeah.
Because I see you involved with it a lot. You know, you talk about it on Twitter. There are a bunch of events and all.
Yeah.
And we'll probably have some other people from Techstars here in the future.
Sure.
And talk to me about the process. Talk to me what you got out of it. Talk to me about what the family's like a little bit. You know, you don't have 20 minutes here because we don't want to make this an hour. But
sure. Yeah, it's very straightforward. I think Techstars is – there are many startup accelerators all over the U.S. And some of them are great. Some of them are so-so. The thing I like about Techstars is they index on two things. They index on the people. So a big part of who they bring into the program is based on who the founding team is. So they spend a lot of time with the people and really make sure that it's a core set of people that can potentially go build big things. And for me, that's very undervalued part of a early startup team is the people itself. Forget the idea, forget the technical chops and so on. Like, who are these people and can they grind it out? Because startups are a marathon, so can they grind it out for 5 to 10 years? That's number one. And then the second is, Techstars is in its core ethos is built by the mentality of, how do I support entrepreneurs via mentors? So for every program, they bring in local investors, entrepreneurs, and even senior executives from companies who can come in and take their workday hats off and truly be helpful to you, roll up their sleeves and say, how can I help you solve problems? And so I coined a term that I live by now, that I'm a big believer in mentor-backed entrepreneurship, right? So you talk about venture-backed startups. I want to be a mentor-backed startup, because if I can get 10 people helping me day in and day out instead of one investor, I'll take the 10 every day.
So taking that line, who are you mentoring?
I actually work with a bunch of startups here in Boston, and I've invested in some of them as well. And for me, it's an opportunity. You know, most of them don't want me to talk about their names, but the ones I can.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask you to name your favorite, because you know the others will get mad. But
yeah, I work with a local company here called Sunsprite. They're doing some very interesting things with wearable technologies. Work with a company called Tala here in Boston. It's a company in India called G Quotient that I do a lot of work with. And bottom line is, it also gives me the ability to spend an hour or two a week not thinking about my business, but thinking about somebody else's. It gives me a different perspective of what the grind looks like for somebody else as well.
And also gives you the ability to get out of your own head and sometimes take that back and find solutions.
Absolutely.
That you weren't looking for.
Absolutely. And you know, I think if you get into the startup journey, it's a pretty close circle. Everybody knows everybody if you network a little bit. And you know, your career is a 30 to 40 year journey, right? And the more people you help and get help from, this thing will keep giving as you continue your journey. And for me, that's a big deal. It's a huge deal.
So someday when this blows up, you're serving a billion people.
Yeah. How do you know we're not already?
You sell it or you retire.
Yeah.
How long do you sit on the couch before your wife kicks you back off it again?
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I truly believe that I think she will want me to take a break, because, you know, as a startup entrepreneur, there's no such thing as work-life balance, right? You love what you do at work and you love what you do at home and you're always on. And the only time you're not is when you sleep, and that's it. And so I think she will want me to pause, because there are days in which she looks at me and says, I think you need to rest. Like, I haven't taken a vacation in God knows how long. So I think she will want me to take a break. But I think she will be the one who will come to me and said, all right, it's time. Get out of the house. Go do something new.
Go put some pants on.
Stop playing golf. Go put some pants on. Get out of the house and go do something. But look, I love ideas. I love building things. I've always been that way. So I don't see myself not doing anything.
Shravish, I want to thank you for taking the time. This has actually been an awesome conversation.
It's fun.
And thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.